Yankee Yarn Time. Time to hear another story of New England, presented by Alden Hall Blackington and brought to you by the friendly First National Stores, New England's largest retailer of fine food.
Good evening. Well, folks, I guess it's about time I kept my promise to tell you the story so many have asked for, about the greatest Indian chief who ever lived and ruled in New England, Passaconaway. I told you about this great Peshawba some time ago, but so many folks have asked me to tell more about him, I'm going to do so right now. There have been hundreds of articles, books, poems, and pictures about such famous Indians as Samoset, Squanto, Massasoit, and King Philip, but there's almost no mention of Passaconaway, who did more to keep the peace than all the rest of them put together. Passaconaway was born sometime prior to 1580 in the hills of New Hampshire. And even as a young brave, he was a leader, being tall and straight, strong and handsome. His voice, powerful enough to be heard at great distances, was also mellow, musical, and mystic when he wanted it to be. He could imitate the sweetest song of the littlest bird, or make your blood run cold with a howl of a timber wolf. His eyes, dark and deep, looked straight through a man, and at times they burned with a fire not of this world. The Pennacocks boasted that at 15, Passaconaway could outrun the fastest deer and spear a pickerel before he could move, and not another man in all the tribe could bend the bow he carried on his 21st birthday. At that time, Passaconaway was 6'4" in his moccasins and weighed 216 pounds. Mentally as well as physically, Passaconaway was a giant. He alone, among all the younger braves, was allowed to sit at the council fire when the chiefs and medicine men debated their problems and made their laws. To him was given the gift of prophecy, and in some mystical manner he could read the minds of others. Thus he knew the noble or evil thoughts held by his friends and enemies. By sheer force of character, strength, and intelligence, he rose from the ranks as medicine man, sub-chief, chief, and then Peshawba, which in Indian means chief of all chiefs. It was not strange, therefore, that Passaconaway should be called to the Indian powwow in Plymouth, Massachusetts, shortly after the Pilgrims arrived and took over the land which the Indians regarded as their own. Delegates from many tribes came from far and near, but Passaconaway, towering over them all, was quickly chosen to preside at the war council, acting as a sort of supreme judge. Gravely he listened to the testimony that strange white men had come in ships to trespass and to shoot with their iron pipes. They had given the braves a new kind of fire water that made them crazy. A few of their brothers had been killed. After listening for 3 days and nights, Passaconaway retired to the forest, and there, all alone under the tall, whispering pines, he raised his noble face to the moonlit sky and said, "Great White Father, your faithful son Passaconaway speaks in behalf of his brother. Strangers have come from across the water. They have taken our land and are shooting our deer. They give poison to the young braves. They kill my brothers. Great White Father, I beg you to send the wild winds to blow their teepees down. Send the slashing rains to wash their corn into the sea. Send the lightning to kill their animals, so that we, your children, may live in peace." Over and over, Passaconaway said his prayer. A curse, if you want to call it that. And then when the eastern sky was tinged with red and gold of the summer's morn, he went back to the camp and told the council what he had done. The next day, all the redskins crept silently through the forest to the highest hill, where they watched and waited for the destruction of the Pilgrim settlement. But no hurricane came to Plymouth, Massachusetts. The sky was fair, the wind soft, the sea calm. Passaconaway, standing aloof and brooding because his master had failed him, suddenly heard above him in the trees the high, shrill song of the locust. Why hadn't he thought of them before? Again he raised his voice and implored the Great Spirit to send the locusts and grasshoppers and all the other insects to plague the palefaces. May they strip their fields and sting their beasts and fill the wells till not a drop of water is left. But no insects came to plague the pilgrims. And Passaconaway, puzzled at the failure of his prayer, went back into the solitude and cried, "Why, O Great Spirit, why do you not protect your children?" And from the whispering pines above him came the voice of the Great Spirit, saying, "My son, you have been brought here to see with your own eyes the pale faces from the other side of the great waters. It was I who guided them through the angry seas and protected their ships against the winter winds. I have commanded them to set up their teepees on this shore and raise their corn and their children. The pale faces are your brothers, Passaconaway, and they must not be molested. There is room for all the brothers on this, my earth, and all of you must dwell in peace. That is the command I give you, Passaconaway, peace and friendship and brotherhood. Carry it to all the tribes as long as you live. It is the will of the Great White Father. That night when the sachems and sagamores gathered around the council fire, Passaconaway told them what the Great Spirit had commanded. There was a deep silence, a softening of expression on the stern old faces. Some of the younger braves, who wanted a few white scalps, grumbled a bit, but the great Bashaba quickly silenced them. At dawn, all the fires were put out, tents were struck, and the red men silently melted into the great green forest, leaving the little stockade of Plymouth to the pilgrims and peace. From that day on, and he lived to be 105, never once did Passaconaway raise a finger against any white man, woman, or child. Wherever he went, he talked friendship and peace. If his words fell on deaf ears, it wasn't his fault. In 1631, he was called to settle the ticklish situation. Two Indians, made drunk by the white man's liquor, ran amok and killed a settler named Jenkins. Each side blamed the other, and the Englishman demanded that the Indians be put to death. After due deliberation, the great sachem spoke as follows. The white men are guilty of giving the fire water to our brothers, but they were weak and wrong in drinking it. They killed a white brother. They have brought disgrace on all our tribes, and therefore they must die. Had conditions been reversed, do you think any white official would have done that? Then there was the delicate and dangerous matter of selling guns to the Redskins. A conference between British and Indian chiefs in Boston was deadlocked, so they sent for Passaconaway. After listening to the peacemaker of the Penacooks, the red men agreed to lay down their arms and buy no more. Thus, the two races were saved from further bloody warfare. In 1848, Passaconaway accepted Christianity and was baptized with all the members of his family by Reverend John Elliott, the apostle to the Indians. From then on, wherever he went, and he traveled all over, he preached the brotherhood of man as taught by the good book. He also practiced miracles. At least, that's what the white folks called them. And to the day he died, no one ever understood the strange powers that Passaconaway possessed. There is in existence today ample testimony to the authenticity of these unexplained events given in writing to the officials of Massachusetts. At Amaskeg Falls, now Manchester, New Hampshire, Passaconaway caused rocks to move, trees to dance, ice to form in summer, and sticks to burst into flame without anyone touching them. Oh, I know it's hard to believe all this, but look it up sometime in the old histories. Mr. George Calvin Carter, an authority on the great Bashaba, found many references to Passaconaway's occult powers, such as his ability to surround himself with a white mist and then apparently disappear. Naturally, there were many legends about such a man, and one of the most beautiful concerns his passing to the happy hunting grounds. When he was 82, Passaconaway petitioned Governor Endicott for a small piece of land where he could live in peace with his family in his old age. Endicott said, give that old Injun valuable land? No, sir. He can have one of the islands in the Merrimack if he wants it, but he'll have to pay for the surveying. And pay he did. £25. For a deed to property that truly belonged to him and his tribe. Early in the year 1864, when Passaconaway was 105 years old, he had a vision that the end was near. He was told to go to what is now Dustin Island, where the wild rushing Kentucket meets the Merrimack. There, the spirit voice said, you will be prepared for your last long journey. In spite of his great age, Passaconaway was still straight as an arrow. His beautiful face was wrinkled now, but his eyes still sparkled as he stood on the ice-covered river and gazed up into the cold, clear blue sky. Far off in the direction of what is now Concord, he saw white puffy clouds rise and move toward him. Mingled with the white clouds were smaller, faster gray clouds, which all of a sudden took the shape of wolves, the fastest things in the forest. They danced round and round in the heavens. Then, falling into line two by two, they floated down to the frozen river with a big, thick cloud right behind them. The cloud melted away, revealing a magnificent sledge draped with thick, warm furs from all the animals of forest, lake, and stream. The sledge drew up in front of the old Indian sachem. A gentle breeze lifted a beautiful bearskin and dropped it gently on the ice. Passacanaway climbed into the sleigh, and the wind wafted the thick, warm furs around him. And suddenly, a handsome rawhide whip appeared in his hand, the handle covered with glistening stones. When he cracked the whip, far out over the lead wolves, long blue sparks lighted the dark side of the distant hill, and a rumble of thunder shook the ice. He cracked the whip again, and the big sledge moved forward, gathering speed on the clear, crystal surface of the frozen stream. Away they went, in a cloud of swirling snow, over the frozen wastes of the Merrimack Valley, crossing the meadows at Open Rapids, but following the stream through what we know as Boscawen, Franklin, Tilton, and Laconia. At Aquidauquenish, or the Weirs, it was necessary to slacken speed, for here Passacanaway had his last earthly view of his people. Hundreds of them stood on the ice of Lake Winnipesaukee, and above them, in a mass of towering clouds, Passacanaway saw his Indian ancestors, with their arms extended, the Indian sign for welcome, brother. Now the long gray wolf train moved to the middle of the lake. Then in a cloud of dazzling sun-sparkled snow, they took off, the wolves leaping lightly into the frosty air. Soon they were high above the tallest pines and headed straight for the glistening, snow-covered peak of Mount Washington. Back on the ice at Winnipesaukee, the Indians who had gathered to bid their master farewell saw the dark clouds open, revealing a glorious golden-green valley. The magic sled passed through the clouds. The clouds closed in. The wind whistled through the bare branches of the trees, and snow began to fall. Thus did the great Passacanaway enter the happy hunting ground, where all the brothers of the earth dwell in peace with the great white spirit, God of the Indian and God of all mankind.
This is Westinghouse.